David Geffen of Asylum Records, and other things that will be brought out during this hour or so, or next hour or two, or three, depending upon how long we decide we want to go, has been an agent, and is now a manager, is a record company executive, and he's probably one of the most famous men in the business today, and rightfully so. He's a member of the firm of Geffen & Roberts, and also one of the partners with his partner, Elliot Roberts, in Asylum Records, which, as of course everybody knows, has got the biggies, including Joni Mitchell, among others. David, how long ago did you start in this business?
Well, in 1964, I got a job in the mailroom with the William Morris Agency, mostly as an accident, really. I was trying to earn enough money to get back to California.
Were you a Californian?
No, but I had moved out here in 1960 after I graduated high school. I had to go back to New York because my father had passed away, so I went back and was trying to get it together to come back out here, and someone said to me, get a job at the, you know, and you learn some things, and then, you know, move out to California.
And so how long were you a mailboy?
Well, I was a mailboy for about 6 months, and then I became a secretary, which is the way you moved up at the William Morris Agency, and then I became an assistant agent, and then an agent, and after about 3.5-4 years, I left to go to the Ashley Famous Agency as the head of their music division.
What people did you handle at the Ashley Famous Agency, for example? What names do we know today?
Well, at the William Morris Agency,
I handled
Jesse Colin Young and the Youngbloods and Janice Ian and the Association, Laura Nero, Buffalo Springfield.
What in your background would give you, shall I say, as an agent, what background as an agent do you believe trained you to become a manager?
Well, I think that being an agent is probably the best training for a manager because you see all ends of the business, you know, from the point of view of the buyer, the seller, the artist, what's the best thing and what isn't. And you get to see careers from a long-range standpoint. As an agent, you're involving them over a period of time. You see them come and you see them go, you know, and you see why it went and how it came. And I think it's the best way to learn what to do correctly.
Yeah.
By seeing how many people screw up.
In other words, getting it from the selling end of it, actually, that's what agentry is, isn't it?
Well, I wasn't really a salesman as an agent. I was more a talent scout, and I kind of shepherded the talent.
You took them around from club to club?
Sure.
Concert to concert?
Concert to concert, help them with their, you know, picking material or getting a producer, things like that. I did things that most agents don't do because I got very involved with the acts. I mean, it was a lot of fun. You know, I was 21, and it was a big thrill. Just a few years before that, I was waiting backstage to see Peter, Paul, and Mary leave a concert hall, you know, just to get a glimpse of them. So it was a thrill.
And did anybody else in your family ever been in show business or get involved in show business? You have a unique reputation of being a person who likes to get likes to have a personal relationship with their artists. No contracts has been one of the biggest things that's ever been talked about about you.
Yeah, well, as an agent, I saw how much paranoia was caused by artists and their managers due to contracts and contractual relationships and things like that. And I always thought that if you had a relationship that was stronger than a contract, and it would end up being the thing that eliminated the most paranoia, was having the freest relationship. And we've never had any contracts, and we've never lost any artists. I mean, no one's ever left us because we do a really good job for them. I don't think they can find a better place, in my opinion.
All right. I mean, this is when you say this about an artist, when you mention that an artist, it's a better relationship to have with an artist, not to have a contract with them, and you have never lost an artist. It has been rumored that you lost Laura Nero.
No, we dropped Laura Nero.
You dropped Laura Nero? Explain that to me.
I mean, I called Laura and told Laura I felt that it was time for her to get somebody else, that we weren't on the same track and we weren't going in the same direction. And she wasn't taking my advice about certain things. I mean, I wanted her to not renew a contract with Columbia Records. She insisted on renewing it. And I felt that if she wasn't going to take my advice, what's the point of my being her manager? You know, to stay involved just to collect 15% wasn't worth it to me.
15% is what you get as a manager.
Yeah, we charge all our clients 15% of what they earn.
How long did you manage Laura Nero?
Oh, many years.
How many years total?
From Monterey
From Monterey Pop, 67?
Yeah, 67 till last year.
Till 72, mm-hmm. five total of 5 years. Is it true that that in renegotiating her deal, I guess is your maybe your final business?
Yeah, the final business transaction I had is I made a new deal for her at Columbia Records and sold her publishing there for...
Was that true, the figure of $4 million?
Yeah.
And of which you were a half owner?
Well, we were partners in the company,
like
in the publishing company, and... we sold that company for $4 million.
Is that a common practice to be a partner with your artist insofar as a publishing company is concerned?
Well, very many managers get all the publishing. We've never done anything less than be part. We've never done anything, taken any more than a partnership where the artist gets half and we get half and they keep the writer's share. So in essence, if there's 2 cents mm-hmm. for each song, they get a penny and a half and we get a half a penny.
Mm-hmm.
We've always felt that was fair, and our artists seem to think that's fair. Since they have no contracts with us, they could always leave and save it. But none of them seem to leave.
Well, the managerial aspects of it are separate, of course, from the publishing end of it.
Well, in a sense only. I mean, we manage their careers. We manage everything about what they do. And we manage, as a publisher, as Laura's publisher, for instance, I mean, I got the Fifth Dimension to record her songs, mm-hmm. and Barbara Streisand, and Three Dog Night, and Blood, Sweat, and Tears, etc. And that's what made her happen, because her records weren't selling. It was other people's recordings of her songs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the impetus for her career.
Okay. Let's see, beginning with Laura Nyro, when you joined forces with Elliot Roberts, what date was that?
Gee, I don't remember. Elliot and I have always worked together.
Well, Elliot at one time was the sole manager of Joni Mitchell, is that correct?
Well, Elliot worked for me at the William Morris Agency, and, mm-hmm. and I got him a job working as a manager, and he managed Joni Mitchell, and I was her agent.
I see.
I mean, we always worked together, either
as
partners
manager
or as a manager agent, so to speak.
Well, I want to go back in time to a time when Joni Mitchell came out here, which would be about, I believe, 68.
Right.
She came out from the West, and Elliot Roberts came out also from the East Coast to handle her exclusively at the moment, at the time. You, I believe this was also that year was the formative stages of Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
It wasn't really happening at that point. They were kind of hanging out, David and Stephen and Graham, when he was in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think at that time we had any idea that they'd be a group.
What I'm trying to pinpoint is the fact that when they did formulate, you were the manager, is that correct?
Yes.
And Elliot, I believe, was still managing Joni and was managing Neil Young.
Right.
Okay. And then you two people joined forces, is that correct? And then he brought his people in, and then you brought your people in.
Well, we were always working together.
I got
so
you.
That the,
so it was
the,
never
the
any...
The merger was kind of...
just a matter of...
A given, you know.
Uh-huh. It would just happen as a matter of...
Of course. You know, because we were close friends and... The people that I was involved with, Elliot was involved with, and vice versa.
I got you. It was a one-tight community.
And our clients were close friends, and it was just something that was natural,
mm-hmm.
and something that's been very natural all these years.
Are there any other managers that do what you do, insofar as, you know, have that kind of relationship?
Well, I think lots of managers have close personal relationships with their
clients.
With
no paper?
I don't think many have relationships that aren't contractual relationships, but... I don't think that's the only difference between our company and other companies. I think that that our company is special and that all of the artists have been close friends and helped each other as well as, you know, there's a real family feeling. It's like David Blue, who's a client of ours,
mm-hmm.
his album was just produced by Graham Nash, and they all play on each other's records. I mean, there's a real friendly, warm kind of involved feeling about everybody, and it makes it much easier to live that way. I mean...
How long is the sale? I'm sorry.
There isn't the competitiveness, you know, oh, Joni's 12 on the charts and I'm only 16. I mean, none of that has ever existed. There's never been that problem.
Okay. How long has Asylum Records been?
Asylum has been in existence a year and a half now.
A year and a half. Did you have to wait for, say, Joni's contract to be up at...
No, we didn't start the company because... of Joni or for Joni. We started the company because we had found a number of new artists like the Eagles and Judy Sill and Jackson Browne that we found very little interest for at other record companies. So we decided that if we believed in them, we had enough money to gamble it, and we would finance this thing ourselves and see how it went.
How does as part of that question, How does a company like Asylum, which is, of course, an independent company, but is distributed through Atlantic or through the Warner's Atlantic Group.
It's distributed through the Warner's
Communication Group, or whatever. How does it dovetail? Now, you're into three different areas. Actually, it's maybe two questions in one.
What's that?
You're a manager. You're also a co-publisher, and you're now a producer of your own artist's.
Well, we're not a producer. We're a record company.
A record company.
We finance these records and give them the opportunity to record in a way that no other record company will. And we give them total freedom in every area of making records, from the covers to the choice of material to the way they record to the studios that they record in. We don't have budgets for our artists. I mean, they make records that cost whatever they cost. I think that's unique in the recording industry.
I think it is, too.
I mean, when we sign an artist like David Blue, it doesn't make a difference to us whether he sells records or not. Naturally, we hope that he sells records. But we're not going to drop him if he doesn't, because Asylum Records wasn't necessarily started to be a money-making thing. I mean, naturally, we hope that it makes money because it gives us the opportunity to record more people, more new people. I mean, that's the business that we're in, discovering and building new talented artists and giving people an opportunity to record freely. And luckily, with our first 8 releases, we had 5 hits. Mm-hmm. And with our next 10 releases, I think we'll have 8 or 9 hits. I mean, most of those are new artists.
Would you like to tell us who these new artists are that you're referring to that you expect to
have
a lot? Okay.
There's one artist named Tom Waits who's fantastic, who has a record coming out in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Tom Waits.
An artist named Steve Ferguson, mm-hmm. who's very talented, I believe.
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to think of the records that we have coming out now. Mm-hmm. We have a record by a gentleman named Rod Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Well, then give me a total of how many people. Can you give me a total of how many people, including the ones you already have?
Including the ones, I mean, a total of all the people who record for Asylum? At this point, I'd say there are 15 people who record
15 people recording for Asylum right now. My next question is, you've just now made a jump. Asylum Records is now being moved over to in another direction. You're now moving over into what capacity at Warner's?
Well, it's Warner's Communication, not Warner Brothers Records.
Right,
Asylum
Warner's
Records still stays through, is distributed through the Atlantic Company, mm-hmm. but the company is now part of the Warner's Communication Group, and I'm on the board of directors of the Warner's Music Group with Mo Austin, mm-hmm. Joe Smith, Ahmed Erdogan, Jack Holtzman.
Well, all those people from the Warner's Atlantic Group
is now
constituted now. Is that a step up? I would imagine.
Well, I mean, it's a step up for me, and I think it's a step up for Asylum because it gives me and my company a greater voice in the way the entire corporation is going.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have a certain amount of influence as to distribution, the branches. You know, mm-hmm. you know, it's a much better position for us to protect our record company in that larger sphere.
But then, if you've taken on this whole new, you've stepped into this whole new sphere, to right. use your words of a few moments ago.
You can use my words, Mitch.
I intend to all the time, as much as possible, because I admire you a lot, David. I mean,
well, that's really
this
nice
is not,
of
it's
you.
Not a puff piece in essence, because I mean, I could very easily, I might even get incisive. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind as yet.
Don't get incisive, Mitch.
Not to the heart. Not
okay.
to the heart yet. But I mean, maybe to the gut.
Okay.
It's a power play, is it not?
No, I don't think it's a power play. I think that we're a powerful company, and I think that the reason we're powerful is because we represent so many important artists in this business. I mean, we have a dozen of the best recording people in the world, and therefore we're a powerful company. I don't think that we exercise power in a capricious manner.
Well, I didn't say capricious manner. I didn't mean it as a capricious in a capricious sense. I mean, I was not accusing you of that.
I think that in order to do the best job for these artists, we have to be powerful, and we have to be strong, and we are.
Well, where is the industry today? I mean, isn't it true that the industry, the music industry today, album sales have been down for almost a year, solidly, since
well,
last
I mean,
spring?
There's been a recession in this country, too. I don't think that that's any reflection on anything more than people's pocketbooks, how much money they have to spend. I think the music business as a whole is growing tremendously. There were more records sold last year than there were this year, but there weren't as many albums that were as huge sellers as perhaps they've been in the past. But then there are no more Beatles, and there are no, you know, that's all over.
Well,
Simon and Garfunkel isn't together. Those were two of the biggest record sellers in the world, and they're not together. So,
Crosby, Stills, and Nash is still together.
Well, it wasn't until yesterday when they started recording
a
new album.
Well,
of course, you knew that they broke
up.
And, and yesterday they went back in the studio to make a new album, which is fantastic. And I think that's another thing that we do, which is special. I mean, we were able to get all of the original Byrds, who ostensibly hated each other, back together again, you know, and got them friendly enough again to where they'd want to make a record together, and comfortable enough so that they make a good record, which is exactly what they've done. I think it's the best record that they've made together. That'll be out in about 3 weeks.
For the purpose of the fact that we may not, this is a side trip, let it keep rolling, Eddie. For the virtue of the fact that yesterday was a definitive reference to actually yesterday, Tuesday, January 24th, and I don't know when this is going on. So I'd like to have you rephrase that, if you would, and say, like, till just recently, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and, you know, we didn't know if they're going to have to get together again. If you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
Like, the current Byrds thing.
Okay.
We'll refer to that.
Okay.
We'll make that two questions.
Okay.
You dig what I'm trying to say?
Right. Yeah.
What was my original question, actually? Do you remember what it was? All right.
You said Crosby, Stills, and Nash are still
together. Right. Here we go. We're talking about supergroups. You were mentioning something about Simon and Garfunkel no longer recording, and the industry,
the Beatles,
and the Beatles and people like that. And I flashed on Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I mean, they're still together, or are they together? I mean, they are together.
Well, yeah, they've just gone back in the studio and are making a new album.
But it was in doubt for a while if they would do that.
Well, I think that it was doubtful that they'd ever get together again, because each one of them had become very important as a solo artist, and I think that their solo records became more important to them than the group records.
Mm.
But they were all hanging around the office and started singing together and decided that this was silly. You know,
feuding and fussing is really silly, right?
Yeah, and they decided to make another record together. Now, Neil is on the road now, and so he's not available to make a CSNY album.
Yeah.
So they're making a CSN album, and hopefully there'll be a CSNY album.
The Byrd thing that you negotiated after many, many, many long months of agonizing discussions with the
Wasn't that agonizing.
The hardest
part of it was getting them to want to do it, you know, because there'd been so many hassles. And, you know, David.
Yes,
so you know how emotional that situation was. What we did is, we created a situation where they could get together unpressured, work together, decide whether or not it would make good music. And at the point that they decided that it was good music, set up the circumstances so they could make a really fine album. And it really is a fine album. It's going to be released soon, and it's, I think, the best album that they've ever made together.
Is it the original material?
There are 8 original songs by the group, 2 songs by Neil Young, and 1 by Joni Mitchell.
8 original, 2 and 1, a total of 11. That's interesting. Are the 2 by Neil things that have been recorded before by him, or brand new?
Well, one of them was recorded before by him, Cowgirl in the Sand.
Cowgirl.
And one that he's never recorded called See the Sky About to Rain.
See the Sky About to Rain. I'm making notes as I go along. I hope you don't mind. What about the Joni Mitchell thing?
Joni Mitchell thing is a song, it's a great song that they've always loved called For Free.
For Free, oh, right, out of the White Album. Yeah. What about that? That's a funny frame of reference, isn't it? Joni Mitchell's White Album, Blue Album, etc. Was that calculated? Because everybody just picked up on it right away.
No, actually not. The White Album is the Ladies of the Canyon.
Yeah, Ladies
album,
of the Canyon,
which was
but
just white because it was
white.
A line drawing.
Yeah,
and the
right.
Blue Album was called that because there was a song called Blue,
yeah, right.
Which was a really brilliant song.
Yeah.
And the new album, For the Roses, is titled that only because there's a song called For the Roses, which is kind of Joni's commentary on the music business.
I know it is.
And how it's affected her friends.
Yeah. I just flashed on a whole new aspect of it. By virtue of you saying that, I just got a whole new dimension of that particular album. Okay. We've covered a while back the fact that you negotiated a deal for Laura Nyro, renegotiated a deal for her at Columbia, which made you a millionaire. I understand that
the way you say that.
I don't mean that in a rancorous fashion. I love it. I mean, the point I'm trying to get at is that artists sometimes come and go, but managers, you know, good managers such as yourself, such as Albert Grossman, hang on and stay in there and hang tough and always get the big name acts.
Well, we've been involved with our artists usually from the beginning, before they were big name acts. We've helped build them. When we got involved with Laura, mm-hmm. she was a failure, you know, after yes. Monterey. Joni had never made a record.
Mm-hmm.
The Buffalo Springfield had broken up.
Right.
David Crosby was thrown out of the Birds.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't say that, you know, we get the big name acts. I think we've helped make those big name acts big names. I would say that they're all very talented and probably would have been successful without us, but I think we've made a contribution, and I think they think so too, and that's why we're all together. I don't know of another company that still represents mm-hmm. all the people that they started with, and that all the people that they started with are still
with them,
heavy and strong and creative and continuing to make good records.
Mm. How many people come across your door up on Sunset Boulevard during a given week?
You mean with tapes and things like that?
With tapes and things like that.
Oh, I would say about a dozen a week.
A dozen a week. And that's over 52 weeks. You've only been in operation actually a year and a half, but the reputation of Asylum grew in a hurry. Well, your reputation as managers grew in a hurry anyway. Had always been there. But over 52 weeks, that's fast calculation, at least 600. How many groups how many people have you signed out of those 600?
About four.
Four. I read someplace a long time ago when there's some fine articles being written about you in Newsweek and also in, I believe it was a calendar section.
I thought that
article.
Newsweek article was horrible.
Well, you got national publicity, David. Let's not. This
it's a double-edged sword.
You think?
For sure.
How
I
so?
I mean, on one level, you think to yourself, well, this is really terrific. All my friends from high school are going to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you read it and it says such stupid things, you know, that you're offended.
You think it's
I don't think that we took four failed musicians, you know, and
and made them into superstars.
And made them into superstars. I mean, we don't do that. I mean, if only we could do that. We don't do that. They were very talented, and we just kind of were a baby doctor, you know, helping them deliver their baby. I mean, we didn't give them the baby, and we didn't create the baby. They did. I mean, it's foolish to think that managers are responsible for the success of their groups. They're responsible for a portion of it, for a small portion of it, a very important portion, I think. But, I mean, managers don't write the songs, and they don't sing them, and they don't play them, and they don't make the records.
But managers do, and do the negotiations on a one-to-one level.
Well, I think
level.
That's the smallest part of what
is
they
it?
Do.
Is it, really?
I don't think that the fact that we can make a good deal is the best thing that we do. The thing that we do the best is we protect these artists, and we create for them an atmosphere into which they can continue to be creative, that they don't get screwed up, that they don't blow it,
mm-hmm.
that they have an opportunity to do what they want to do,
mm-hmm.
which keeps them interested, that we don't force them to make more records than are a good thing for them. Our artists put out records relatively sparsely.
Yes, that's
true. I think that artists that come and go have come and gone making too many records and getting bored and hassled and just lose it.
Do you subsidize an artist who's an unknown at the very outset?
We have subsidized every one of our artists. We supported every single one of them from the beginning.
Does that include equipment and all sorts of things?
Everything.
Everything. And of course it's all recoupable later on.
Well, hopefully you get it back. In the
yeah.
case of many artists, you don't.
You mentioned.
But then again, if you're doing it just to make money,
mm-hmm.
then you can't record artists that you don't believe will be big stars. Now, I don't know that we expect David Blue's records to sell a great deal, but they're important.
David Blue's been around. I mean, this
long
is not
time.
To rank him out, but
God knows he can't be ranked out. He's real talent.
He's a real talented person. I've always wondered why David Blue has not scored. I mean, he's
well.
On
his
what
music
waters.
Is very down and depressing, and I guess there isn't a large audience for it. Although he's just finished a record, which is fantastic, which has a smash hit single, I believe, and which will make him a star—the star that he should have been all these years. I mean, Leonard Cohen, who's a dear friend of ours.
Is Leonard Cohen going to come over to you?
No.
All right, go ahead.
But he's nevertheless a friend, whether we manage him or record him or not.
Yeah.
And he was at my house a couple of weeks ago, and he heard David's album, and he thinks it's one of the best albums that he's ever heard. And I think it is, too.
I've heard you've signed Jimmy Webb.
Yes, that's true.
All right, now
there's another artist who's met with complete indifference as a recording artist, where we've taken him on because we believe in him, and we think he'll make great records. I don't think that he's ever had the opportunity to do what's right for him and gotten the support that an artist like Jimmy Webb needs.
What is an artist like Jimmy Webb? He doesn't really fit into the so-called asylum syndrome.
Well, there is no asylum syndrome.
Well,
he certainly fits in because if there's anything that's indicative of asylum, it's that we record talented people.
Not Jewish country?
Jewish country.
That's my expression, okay.
God, Jewish country.
I've thrown that to you before, and you didn't respond to it the last time. I mean, I made mention of the fact.
I don't think that Joni Mitchell is Jewish country.
No, but I think the
and
Eagles.
I don't think that Jackson Browne is Jewish country.
But the Eagles and John David Souther strike me as Jewish country.
What is Jewish country?
I don't know. It's just my own funny little way of describing Geffen Roberts, which I love a lot, and now Asylum, or now Warner's, whatever. So go back to Jimmy Webb.
Jimmy Webb is a real talented songwriter mm-hmm. and a very serious musician. And he's never had the opportunity to do what was comfortable for him, nor has he had the support and the backing of the people around him, which he now has, because we really believe in him. And if it takes one album or a dozen albums, we'll never drop him. We'll make records with him as long as he wants to make records, because if you believe in the artist, then each record is a document. Mm-hmm. And it's less important that it sell than it be good. And I believe that if a record is good, eventually it will sell. Eventually there's an audience out there for everybody who is good. Mm-hmm. Trouble with most record companies is they make a lot of records that are just really ordinary, that are made by not talented people, not well.
Okay, we're getting into an area which is interesting. Having been an agent, having been a manager, having been a record company executive, and still a record company executive, even more so now, you believe in the one-to-one, like a small. Let us, for the sake of argument's sake, let's take ourselves back 10 years when A&M started, which has grown into a tremendous structure. It was a very, very small start, just Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, then maybe signing one artist at a time. Very, very small, very, very slow growth. And they were able to devote all their time to it. Of course, eventually they got into the mainstream.
Well, they're a great record company.
They're a great record company. Would you consider them on a par with the Warners, the Capitals, the Columbias of this name? Or are they still in another
certainly
area?
Certainly not in size, but I think that they're certainly in quality, one of the best record companies, and I think that the people who run A&M are among the best record executives in America, certainly among the most sensitive. Which I think is important.
All right. Question again, in the same vein as record companies and the size of record companies. Certain companies, without mentioning names, you mentioned a while back the business of signing. Certain companies just put out a lot of records and don't put them out well. You did say that. Am I correct? You know.
Well, what I meant was. Well, that's of course that's true. I think a lot of companies do a bad job in merchandising, promoting,
right.
and getting their artists known and seen and advertised and everything else. But I think the biggest problem with record companies is a lack of taste on behalf of the companies making so many of these records. I mean, as a disc jockey, you must get every record that's made, and you know how many you put on, and you wonder how could any person possibly have thought that this was worth making a record of. You know,
what is the average cost of an album?
Well, I would say our costs are higher than any other record company.
Because, yes, you said you gave
because
them.
We don't have budgets, and we let them spend whatever it takes for them to be happy, because
30,
we want
40,
them to be happy
dollars?
With the records that they make.
30?
Sure, 30, 40. The Steve Ferguson album costs $90,000.
Is that a fact?
And if it sells 5,000 records, I'll be happy, because then 5,000 people will have heard it. But he will be a star, because he's talented, and it takes time. And that's the kind of support we give our artists.
Okay, so my whole thrust of my whole question was that certain companies keep their artist roster at a small level, such as yours. We had a total of what? I don't know, 10, 15?
15 artists.
15 artists. That's small.
Well, I believe this, that if you have 30 artists mm-hmm. who are really talented making fine records, you have a tiny record company. And if you have 15 artists, of which 12 aren't very good, you're too big already.
Is that a fact?
That's what I think.
A while back, you mentioned the fact that you don't drop an artist if he doesn't sell, but it's got to be a cutoff point.
Well, no, not for us. Not if we believe in the artist. If we think he's making good records and they don't sell, we'll continue to make those records.
But if you believe in the artist,
if we don't believe in the artist, we won't sign him in the first place. That's why when you hear about record companies dropping these artists mm-hmm. and cleaning their lists, I mean, they shouldn't have signed those artists unless they were prepared to make a real long term commitment to that artist because they believed in him.
Isn't there a rule of thumb of some sort that for
there's
every
no rule of thumb for us. I mean,
well, maybe not for you, but I've heard this from other people who are rather reputable executives.
I didn't mean to imply that anybody wasn't reputable.
Well, no.
I just think
no.
it's a question.
I'm
of
not even not denigrating you or denigrating them. I mean, I'm getting another opinion. What I'm trying to say is that it was someone gave me a yardstick. I don't know how valid it is, and I want to find out your opinion of it. The yardstick being that for every one I'll have to use, this is by no means a key to who told me this, but for every who, let us say on DECA, they have the right, they can sign five unknowns and try to develop them. In other words, if they have the who,
record
they get Sonny and Cher.
Records companies don't develop artists. Artists develop by themselves. Record companies merely give them the opportunity to make a record. I mean, for every who, you have an opportunity to sign many talented people and give them the opportunity to make records. If you can find many talented people, there aren't that many talented people to begin with.
Then why do so many companies do a house cleaning every once in a while?
Because I think that many companies lack taste.
Getting back to that one again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the key to a success of a record company is its taste. The people that they record, not how much money they spend on advertising or on radio time buys or how much money they give you to make a record, but who they initially record. And I think that, unfortunately, with a lot of these big record companies, they kind of sign everything that's available, and if a small portion of it is successful, if one of them turned out to be Simon and Garfunkel, they say, well, great, you know, we can afford that. But they're talking about people's lives, all those people that they've dropped. That's somebody's life involved in all that.
True. That's like taking a butterfly net and just scooping up everything, hoping that one will be a winner collector's item. Is that it?
Well, in a way, I think it's a lot worse than that.
Hmm.
I think that that an artist, whether he's talented or not, that makes a record is certainly serious about his record. And the thing that makes a record company a home is that the people that you've recorded, not only do you believe in them, but you're committed to them. And that in the face of failure, you'll continue to believe in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from some understanding of what they do. And I think too few record executives have an understanding about what their artists do. Because if they did, first of all, they wouldn't record a lot of the people that they record. And if their motive is only to make records that are going to be hits, a lot of very talented people aren't going to make records. Not all good records are going to reach a mass audience. And I think that it's important that those records be made also, as long as the people are talented.
Now when you go over to the...
I mean, let me give you a good example. That Buffalo Springfield, which was an important group in Southern California, never sold anywhere in America, and they broke up because of a total lack of success. They did not break up for any other reason. They couldn't afford to stay together. They were just all broke.
You mean to tell me we've been living in some sort of cocoon here in Southern California, thinking that Buffalo Springfield
were
nationwide stars? Nationwide stars, you should say. That's weird. I never
Buffalo Springfield was a bomb group. Not one album that they made sold over 100,000 copies.
Is that considered a bomb? Neil Young's first album sold what, 12, 20,000? What was it?
6,000.
6,000.
Yeah, but the point is that Reprise believed in Neil Young and let him make records in spite of the fact they didn't sell. Eventually, he did sell.
His third album cooked and made the other two.
How often do you hear of record companies that drop artists that get signed by another record company and they happen?
Yeah, right.
I don't think it's the change to the record company so much as it took that much time for it to happen. I mean, James Taylor's first album on Apple was a bomb. His first album for Warner's was a gigantic hit.
Yes.
I mean, if Apple had kept James Taylor, he would have made successful records for them, I believe.
When you say a bomb, you're talking about commercial success. We're not talking about artistic success. We're talking about the commerciality of it all, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because artistically, the first album was quite good.
Yeah. But if somebody there had taste, they'd know that this is an artist worth keeping.
Uh-huh.
It seems to me.
So you're putting
Seals and Croft made records for Talent Associates Records.
Do you know?
They made two or three albums that weren't very successful. They then went to Warner Brothers, where they made another couple of records which weren't particularly successful. And finally, they've reached their audience, and they are successful.
Mm.
But it was a matter of time.
You know, you're putting by so saying what you've been saying during this interview, you are putting yourself into a position because you're now moving into that arena whereby your good taste, which has been with you all this time, has got to be even more paramount, or must manifest itself even more so. Am I correct?
No, I don't think
maybe
there'll
be somebody else.
So.
No,
I think that when an artist walks into our office and we listen to their tape and we listen to every tape and we think they're good, and we sit down with them and we find that we like each other, because if there isn't a personal rapport, there's no point in being together.
Mm.
Like Jackson Browne, for instance. Now, you know, Jackson Browne has been around this town
long
for
time.
Many, many years.
Right.
He was signed to other record companies. No one even thought enough of him to make a record.
Yes.
When I heard his music, I thought, my God, I can't believe that nobody has signed him and nobody has made a record with this artist who is so fantastic. And he didn't make a record for us for 2 years. We never rushed him to make a record. And when he finally made a record, he made a great record.
You mean you subsidized him for those 2 years?
Oh, yeah. Well, we subsidized all our artists. By the time the Eagles made their first record, they went to us for about $100,000. It cost a lot of money to support 4 guys, equipment, road managers, their apartments, their phones, etc., for a year. It cost a great deal of money. And the only way you can do that is if you believe in them. What a lot of record companies do is they pay a lot of money to sign an artist, and then they want them to make a record the next day so they can get it out and start recouping their money. We've never done that.
Gotcha.
I mean, we're willing to make the investment and wait until it's the right time, which they know better than anybody, when the music is right. And that's why so many things that we've been involved with have been successful, because we've never pushed them, we've never rushed them.
Stop tape for a minute, Eddie. Okay, well, just maybe just roll for a minute. He just triggered an idea in my mind. I'm continuing.
Start the tape.
Start the tape. Maybe you're there, Eddie. Your new title is what?
No new title.
No. But you will not be one-to-one with your artists anymore, will you?
I certainly will.
How can you be if you're now into another arena?
What difference does... I'm not in another arena. I'm in the same arena. But, I mean, my relationship with my artists is not based on my position. It's based on my feeling for them and their feeling for me. It isn't based on any kind of position.
But you are over there in the new... Let me, for want of a better way of putting it, I mean, you gave me the correct title a while back. You are now on the executive board, I believe. Is that what you said? Warner's Electric?
Yeah. Warner's Electric Atlantic.
Along with people like Jack Holzman from Elektra.
Mo Austin
of Joe Warner's. Joe Smith of Warner's. And also
Amir Erdogan
of Atlantic.
Right.
And Atco. And you are taking a position side by side with Asylum Records being a much smaller label in comparison to the other ones. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. In other words, Asylum, now it could be now called the WEAA, right? For want of a better term?
Well, not really, because Asylum is part of the Atlantic.
All right. But you are up there. Now, what kind of decisions are made on that level?
Well, there are decisions that are made that affect the industry more than even affect artists. For instance, whether or not we should be in quad, whether or not we should use one system as opposed to another, whether or not we should be advertising on television. I mean, it's not just, you know, whether or not James Taylor is going to make 2 records or 1 record. Each man on the board runs a company autonomously.
That's what I meant.
Mo and Joe run Warner's Reprise completely autonomously. Mm-hmm. Ahmed Erdogan runs Atlantic completely autonomously. I run Asylum completely autonomously. We don't discuss who we're going to sign. We compete with each other for artists. I mean,
right now,
Jack Holzman and I are competing for an artist, and hopefully we'll get them. I do think that this particular artist is lucky in that whoever gets him, he's going to be with a good record company. Elektra is a very fine record company. I think the one thing about the Warner Communication group of record companies is they're all really fine record companies. Atlantic, Elektra, Warner's, Reprise, Asylum, they're all very fine record companies run by relatively sensitive people.
Mm-hmm. So you, what you're trying to tell me, insofar as this Warner's Communication group, the decisions that are made on that level really have something to do with the industry as a whole?
Well,
or
also as far as our company, whether or not we're going to set up our own foreign companies or distribute through existing foreign companies, whether or not we should be building our own studios or not. Is it a good thing? Should we be in the...
Collectively, group-wise?
Collectively and individually.
Mm-hmm. There already are studios over there at Elektra. There are already studios in New York.
Yeah, well, Jack wanted to have studios. Atlantic has a studio.
Mm-hmm.
Warner's Reprise doesn't have studios.
That's right, they do not have studios.
Asylum has no studios. We don't want a studio. We'd like to let our artists record wherever they feel comfortable.
Yes, getting back to that again. Well, so won't you be leaving a lot of the managerial aspects of this thing to Elliot, your partner?
Elliot and I have always managed these people together, and we have a really fine staff of people who've been with us from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly a lot of things are done, for instance, like routing and getting tickets for airplanes and things like that, which managers do. I don't do. But I don't think that that's necessary.
You don't
for me
do
to
that?
Do.
Well, you don't personally do it, but you have the people who
I mean, it's always taken care of by our office. But I think when it comes to decisions as to whether or not Neil Young should go on tour or whether or not we should put out a record sooner than a year, those are decisions that I'm involved with.
I got you.
Whether or not We go on TWA or American Airlines. Aren't things that require...
That's not important. What would you, if somebody was listening to you right now, listening to you expound upon, we've talked pretty much on
I'm sure they're bored to death.
I doubt that very much. The record industry, you've pretty well covered it from the executive point of view, and we've gotten into some deep things insofar as managerial things, which are personal things. You very, very telling couple of phrases that you have mentioned or have articulated have to do with the business of being able to financially support an artist who comes across your door and you say, wow, I like, he's not ready yet.
Well, we're lucky because it's always been our company. It's still our company. We can...
But you've poured the monies that you've made in other areas into this thing and you're able to subsidize other people.
Absolutely.
All right. You started to say, I interrupted you. I'll come back to my question.
What I was going to say is that many companies are run very differently than our group of companies. I think that a company like, for instance, Columbia Records, which is one of the biggest and best.
I want you're back to record companies again. Yeah. I want to talk about.
Well, what I'm saying is that. But you see, being a record company is part of good management. The record company that you're with, the kind of support that you can get from a record company is part of what a manager does. In the case of Asylum, where we don't manage all the artists that we record. We only manage a small portion of them. We address ourselves to those people, whether we manage them or not, as managers.
I got you.
And we are willing to support not only the artist and their manager, but support them in a way that record companies don't usually do.
Well, doesn't that sort of undercut the role of the manager that comes to you with an artist?
Not at all. I think it supports the role of the manager. And I think that the managers of the people that we record, for instance, Linda Ronstadt, Baddorf and Rodney, JoJo Gunn, Jimmy Webb, are managed by other people.
Right.
Those managers came to us because of the help that we were able to give them.
Mm-hmm.
And keep on coming to us with artists because they're as happy as they are with the way that we've dealt with them. We're not looking to compete with their managers or to take them away from their managers. We're looking to support their managers. We believe that in order for an artist to make it, he has to have a good manager. And if an artist comes to us that has no manager, we'll either try and find a good manager for them, or if we can't do that, we'll manage them ourselves until they get going. And if they want to find another manager, they're free to go. Once again, we don't have contracts.
Mm-hmm.
If an artist comes to us that we like that has a manager that we can't deal with or that we don't believe is a good manager, we just assume pass because it's got to be a frustrating experience for us and for the artist. I mean, it's got to all be together for it to happen. It's got to be a talented artist with a good manager and a good record company, I believe.
Wow. Pretty good. Repeat for me, if you haven't covered it again, the role of the manager. Getting back to what is the role
manager
of the
manager? The manager lives with the artist.
I mean,
he supports
morning, noon, and night. Now,
well, I mean, he does more than take care of his business. You know, a manager is kind of like a personal friend, a psychiatrist, a financial advisor, a supporter, both financially and emotionally. It's a very difficult job. I think being a manager is the single hardest job of all of these jobs. It's the most involved, it's the most difficult, it's the most time-consuming. In many ways, it's the most rewarding, because if it's the right kind of relationship, it's a beautiful thing. You know, my relationship with Joni or any artist that we represent is very warm and, you know, it's very rewarding.
Yes, but you also, when you get to your level, you are splitting yourself up among them. If it's one-to-one, like, say,
well, you know, in
Joni,
success...
Harvey Kresge, for example, manages Baddorf and Rodney.
Right.
All right, that's the only people he manages at this moment. He managed Simon Cher
right.
at one time. Well, that can be an all-consuming thing for him, and it probably is.
It is.
I know Harvey, and he's an old friend of yours as well as mine. Yet, if Harvey were to embark upon a strictly managerial career in the fashion that you have up until recently, that means you'd be signing this one, that one. And
I don't think there were this one or that one available that are talented.
Well, let's for argument's sake say there were.
If they were, and Harvey believed in them, then it's not too much if he can do it. I mean, we've handled Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Laura Nero, Joni Mitchell, the Eagles, Jackson Browne, Poco, the Birds, and others very well. I mean, the fact that we have all those people hasn't made it harder for them. It's made it easier for them.
All right.
I don't think that any one of them feel that they're not getting enough of our time.
That's what I wanted
to know. If they felt that way, they'd leave.
That's right.
And they haven't left.
Obviously. Well, you have a success story. It would not behoove them to leave.
I think also you must remember that it's a new artist starting out that requires the most time.
Right.
I mean, Neil Young, there was a time when we spoke two or three times a day. I don't think that we speak that much anymore, not because we're not as close, but because it's not necessary. I mean, we're not psycho fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're professional managers.
Mm-hmm.
And we give each artist as much time as they need.
Okay, now where's the industry going to go now? Are we really going to go into Quad since you mentioned it?
There's no question that we'll end up in Quad because it's an audio medium, mm-hmm. and any development that makes it more real or more appealing, more exciting, is something that has to happen.
All right.
As stereo had to happen out of mono.
Right.
But where I think the industry is going is that small record companies are going to be springing up, small personal record companies.
Making individual distributorship deals?
I think that these small companies will end up being distributed through the major distribution outlets as Columbia mm-hmm. and the Warner's Group, which are, I think, the mm-hmm. two best distribution outlets, certainly in the world.
Mm.
I think that's a place that the record industry is going. I think that the record industry is going to find that they can't continue to just sign people.
Yes. You keep
record
saying,
them.
You keep saying that there aren't that many talented people around. Why?
Well, I mean, how many Picassos are there of all the paint people who paint?
Oh, I wish you hadn't thrown that one at me, David. That's a bummer. But it's okay. It's a meritorious.
I mean, there are many, many dentists.
But not all.
But not all of them are brilliant and artists.
Yeah, but I mean, but there was a time when the industry was just rife with people. I mean, they were.
It's still rife with people, and every year new artists seem to come up.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that there aren't hundreds of Neil Youngs. There aren't hundreds of Elton Johns. There are just a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a few Carole Kings. When Carole King started to get hot, all of a sudden, everybody was signing every girl who could sing
right.
and write songs.
True.
Well, you know, that's not where it's at.
Same spin-off with Janis Joplin, yeah.
I mean, I've heard certain record company executives say, get me a
blood,
song. Sweat, and tears kind of group.
Yeah.
Get me a group with horns.
Yeah.
You know? But right. not every group with horns is Chicago.
Right.
And the thing that makes Chicago so great is not their horns. You know, I mean, I think that there's a real short-sightedness in our industry. And I think it gets worse because the more people become aware of how much money can be made in the music business, mm-hmm. the more people get attracted to it, thinking, well, my God, all you do is you make a record for a few thousand dollars and you end up with Simon and Garfunkel. But it isn't
That's
like
so
that.
At all. I know it isn't. Okay. I think... any final words you'd like to that we haven't covered that you'd like to bring up at this particular moment?
Just that we have four new records coming out that are fantastic. A new Birds album, JoJo Gunn album, which is really... Crosby, Stills, and Nash recording. Right. Neil Young is going to have a new album coming out.
Oh, as a part and parcel, how's the tour? How's Neil's tour?
Tour's doing fantastic.
And when is the Neil's picture going to be released?
I think it opens in about a month. And okay. There's a new... God, there's so many new terrific records coming out.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.